welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's drama in this hour. Later on, Suspense from 1944. But first, a broadcast of City Hospital, an episode from the later 1940s from the Armed Forces Radio Service.
City Hospital. City Hospital, where life begins and ends, where around the clock, 24 hours a day, men and women are dedicated to the war against suffering and pain. Today's story begins in one of City Hospital's private rooms as Dr. Crane approaches a gray-haired, regal-looking woman lying in the bed.
Good morning, Mrs. Van Dyke. I understand you want to see me.
Yes, Dr. Crane. There's something I think you'll be quite interested in. I've decided to leave all my money to City Hospital.
I don't know what to say.
No need to say anything. Your estate isn't as large as it was when my husband died, but there's still enough to give me a comfortable income. It will be a concrete expression of my gratitude for your kindness to me while I've been in the hospital.
Well, it's extremely generous of you. As you know, we can certainly use the money.
And you shall have it. I've asked my attorney to stop in this afternoon and discuss it with me, but... are you disturbed about anything, Doctor?
I was just wondering. What about your family, Mrs. Van Dyke?
What family?
Isn't there anyone who might be hurt by this? Leaving your entire estate?
No, you needn't have any qualms about that. My only close relative is my daughter, Susan. And we are not on speaking terms.
Not on speaking terms?
That's right. She ran off and married a man named Paul Renzulli, a seedy musician from heaven knows where. One of the reasons I'm doing it. But I don't want either of them ever to have a penny of my money.
Of course, you must do as you think best.
That goes without saying.
There's nothing seriously wrong with Mother, is there, Dr. Crane? You said on the phone.
No, Mrs. Renzulli. It was only a slight stroke. She's fully recovered and will be going home in a few days.
You see, Susan, I told you there was nothing to worry about.
Yes, I don't suppose... did she ask to see me, Dr. Crane?
I'm afraid not, Mrs. Renzulli.
Oh.
I gather you haven't seen her in some time.
Almost 10 years.
She's never even seen our children.
That's her fault, Susan, not yours. Now, what's this all about, Dr. Crane?
It's about your mother-in-law's will, Mr. Renzulli. She wants to leave all of her money to City Hospital.
Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting.
No, hush, Paul. What's that to do with us, Dr. Crane?
Frankly, Mrs. Renzulli, I wanted to know your reaction. There have been a few cases where disappointed relatives have involved the hospital in expensive lawsuits on the death of benefactors, and I'd like to make sure that won't happen here.
You can be sure it won't, Dr. Crane.
Would you be willing to sign a release?
That won't be necessary.
I'd prefer it, if you don't mind.
We'll have to tell him, Paul.
Why?
Because I think we should. The truth is, Dr. Crane, that my mother hasn't any money.
What? I don't understand. She told me
yes,
that...
Yes, I know. And she did have, but it was all invested in a mining company that went bankrupt.
Doesn't she know that?
No. Foster Blair, her attorney, is an old friend, and we got him to keep it quiet. Just tell her that there'd been reverses and that she'd have to cut down her scale of living.
But what does she live on? Do you mean you've been supporting her?
Yes. Paul makes quite a lot of money now, writing background music for the movies, special arrangement songs.
And your mother doesn't have any idea that you're doing this?
No, Mr. Blair handles it all. He sends her regular checks, just the way he used to, out of her income.
I see. But why have you been keeping it a secret?
Well, we couldn't let her starve, could we? And once we were doing something for her, well, why not do it in a way that would keep her happy?
My mother's a proud woman. Can't you imagine how she'd feel if she had to take money from Paul after all she said about him?
And besides, all she had for years was her money. She'd collapse like a punctured balloon if she suddenly realized that she didn't even have that.
So do us a favor, Dr. Crane. Let her make the will and don't say anything about it.
You know, I'm not so sure you're doing the right thing letting her live in a fool's paradise.
Well, surely you don't think she'd be better off knowing.
She might be. If she knew, she might discover that there are other things in life. Things she's been missing.
No, please. Please, Dr. Crane, please don't say anything. You don't know my mother.
Pardon me. Hello. Yes, I see. All right, Nancy, I'll go up. Your mother has sent word that you'd like to see me. The lawyer is there, and she wants me to meet him.
Dr. Crane?
Now, it'll be all right, Mrs. Renzulli. I won't say a word without your permission.
You take care of the details, Foster. I don't care how it's done.
Yes, Mother.
Perhaps we could have a plaque of some kind, something about the Van Dyke Memorial. See what Dr. Crane says.
Yes, Mother.
Too bad the estate isn't what it was. I should have liked to endow a whole wing, but... Oh, good afternoon, Dr. Crane. Foster, this is Dr. Crane. Dr. Crane, my good friend, Mr. Blair.
Mr. Blair, how do you do, Doctor?
You have my permission to tell Dr. Crane all about the quest, Foster, how much money there'll be, and so on.
All right, Margaret, I'll phone Dr. Crane when I get back to my office and set up an appointment.
Oh, nonsense. Do it now. I want everything settled. Because you know what I'm going to do when I leave here? I'm going to take a trip. A trip around the world.
What? Well, you can't do that, Margaret.
Why not? Do you think I have a right to indulge myself a little?
Well, a little, but a trip like that will cost a great deal.
Well, then I'll dip into my capital a bit.
But now you...
Don't be tiresome, Foster. There'll be plenty left for the hospital. Besides, my mind's made up.
I see. Well, then I guess perhaps you're right, Margaret. Perhaps Dr. Crane and I should have our little talk right now. Will you step outside with me, Doctor?
Of course.
Don't forget about the plaque, Foster.
I won't, Margaret. Dr. Crane, I'm in a very awkward position. I don't know how to tell you this.
It's all right, Mr. Blair. I think I know what you're going to say. Mr. and Mrs. Renzulli told me that they've been supporting Mrs. Fender.
Well, thank goodness you know, Dr. Crane. I have never approved of this arrangement, but now matters are going too far. Now, those children can't afford to send Margaret around the world.
Perhaps you can get her to change her mind.
You don't know Margaret. No, she'll have to be told the truth. Unless you don't think she's well enough.
And I don't think there's any worry on that score.
Well, then how shall we do it? Will you tell her, or would you rather I did?
I'm not sure yet. In the meantime, why don't you tell Mrs. Renzulli what's happened and have her meet me here tomorrow morning at 11? Good morning, Mrs. Renzulli.
Good morning, Dr. Crane. Mr. Blair says you want to tell my mother.
Yes.
Well, you can't. I forbid it. We'll have to find some other way of making her give up the idea of this trip.
More deception?
Well, if necessary. It's only to let her keep her dignity or self-respect.
But don't you realize you're doing just the opposite in fooling her?
But we're not. At least...
I think that's the way she would feel about it. Besides, you're in a position now to give her something much more important than money.
Well, I know that, but she'd never accept it.
I wonder... Do you happen to have any pictures of your children with you?
Yes, right here in my purse. Why?
May I have them?
All right. Here. This is Thomas. He's 7. This is Diana. She's 4.
Now, do I have your permission to do what I think best? I'll go slowly, take one step at a time.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Crane. I don't like it. But if you're willing to take the responsibility for
it... I am. Now, you wait here, and I'll go in. Good morning, Mrs. Van Dyke.
Oh, good morning, Dr. Crane. Did you get everything straightened out with Mr. Blair yesterday?
I think so. He told me some very interesting things.
Such as?
That you have 2 grandchildren you have never seen.
No. Never.
Aren't you curious about them?
Well, of course I am. But if seeing them means condoning Susan's marriage to that man... Why are you bringing this up now?
Because I have something to show you. Pictures of them. Here. This is Diana, and that's Tommy.
He looks like my husband when... Diana. I wonder if she has blue eyes. I can't tell. Where did you get these?
From your daughter.
You've seen Susan?
She's right outside the door.
Here?
Yes. Mrs. Van Dyke, may I tell her to come in?
No. I don't want to see her.
Now, you don't mean that. No matter what may have happened, she's still your daughter.
How does she look?
Why don't I let you see for yourself?
No. Just a second, Dr. Crane.
You want to come in, Mrs. Renzulli?
You mean...
Now, go right ahead. I'll wait outside here.
Hello, Mother.
Come over here. Closer.
Mother? How are you?
I was quite ill, but I'm all right now.
I know.
You're looking well.
I am.
How are these children?
Fine. Mother, it's been so long.
Yes. It has. I suppose you and your husband are starving in some horrid little bohemian flat.
No, Mother. Paul's doing very well. He's considered one of our leading young composers. It's been a wonderful marriage in every way.
Has it? Well, I must admit it seems to agree with you. But then tastes differ.
Yes, Mother. But now that you've decided to forget about what happened...
Forget? I'll never forget what you did, Susan.
But asking me to come in...
That was Dr. Crane's idea.
I see. I'm afraid I misunderstood.
Yes. I'm glad you're happy, Susan. I've worried about you in spite of everything.
But you still won't give in. Mother, if you only knew Paul...
I know all I want to about him. And as long as you stay with him, Susan...
That will be forever. So goodbye, Mother.
Just a second, Susan. May I... I'd like to keep these pictures.
All right.
And would you ask Dr. Crane to come and see me?
Yes, Mother.
And if you should ever change your mind...
There's no hope of that, ever. Goodbye.
We'll be back to our show in just a minute, but first, this message. With our American servicemen in many countries around the world, they have a wonderful opportunity to observe new customs and traditions. What might have seemed strange before is becoming pretty familiar to them. For instance, the business of greeting someone. In Europe, the handshake is almost universal, and usually it's one good solid shake instead of a continuous pumping. In certain Pacific islands and among the Eskimos, two people rub noses when meeting. In other localities, sniffing or smelling of an acquaintance is the approved form of recognition. In Japan, the bow represents the courteous greeting. Well, all this might sound strange, but as our servicemen have observed, it's simply the custom of the country. We use the handshake, of course, and the salute between men in service, but between really close friends, relatives, and members of the immediate family, the kiss is not considered bad conduct, even in public. It's not that we're any more affectionate. We simply show our affection in this way. But to many people around the world, this form of greeting is unusual, to say the least. They just simply wouldn't do it any more than we would rub noses, simply because it's not one of their customs. The same is true with other customs and traditions of all countries. The way of doing things may be different, but the ideals are the same. Whether it's greeting a friend, preparing a meal, observing a religious principle, there is no right or wrong way of doing it. It all depends upon the customs of the people where you live. And it's by observing these customs that our servicemen are helping to maintain goodwill with other people in other lands.
Your daughter said you wanted to see me, Mrs. Bendick.
Yes, Dr. Crane. I have something rather embarrassing to say, but I'm sure you'll understand, especially since it was really your doing. I've decided to leave my money to my grandchildren, not to the hospital.
But from what your daughter just said,
Susan and that man are one thing. Their children another. After all, they are half Van Dyke. And they're not to blame for their father. So, you see... Well, I hope you're not too disappointed.
I am, though. Because I was hoping you'd leave your grandchildren something much better and more valuable than money.
What do you mean?
Memories of their grandmother, Mrs. Van Dyke.
Oh. Yes, I'd like that, too, but it's impossible without coming to terms with that man. So, All I can do is leave them the money.
That means you want to do something for them. And since you do, wouldn't you be willing to meet Susan halfway?
Let her meet me halfway. Let her leave that man.
You call that halfway? May I say that I've met your son-in-law, and I think he's a pretty unusual fellow.
Why? Because he's written a few tunes? Because by some miracle he's been able to support my daughter?
No, because he's honest and generous, and he's made your daughter very happy.
So that's it. That's how all this happened. He's behind it, using that cheap charm of his on you.
No, indeed. No.
I just wonder what he's after now. No. I know what he's after. My money. That's what he wants. Well, he never had it. Never. Not as long as I have my senses. And I tie it up so he can't touch a penny of it after I'm dead.
Now listen to me, Mrs. Van Dyke. And remember that you have only to reach out your hand, and you'll have something much, much better than money. I said you had an unusual son-in-law. Now I'm going to prove it to you.
I don't want to discuss the matter any further.
We're going to have to, I'm afraid, because there's something you should know. Do you remember Mr. Blair telling you some years ago that because of financial reverses, your income was going to be reduced?
Of course I remember.
Well, the fact is that it was much more than just reverses. Your entire estate was wiped out.
What? But that's impossible. I've been getting my checks regularly.
Because your son-in-law and daughter have been taking care of you through Mr. Blair.
Susan? Susan and...
Yes, that's right.
It's not true. It's not. You're just saying that because... You mean... I haven't anything at all?
Except for what they've been giving you, no.
I don't believe you. I don't.
Well, you can check with Mr. Blair. But I'm sure you realize I wouldn't lie about anything like that. As for your not having anything, the point I'm trying to make
is... The point is that if it's true, he's been taking care of me. Supporting me. That man.
That's right. And if you'll think about it for a moment, about the warmth and generosity that's behind it.
Think about it? Do you think I'll ever be able to forget it? It's a nightmare, that's what it is. Dependent on him, I'd rather starve. I would. What have I got left now? Nothing.
You've got everything. Everything that really matters. A son-in-law and daughter who have shown in the most concrete way they can how they feel about you. And grandchildren...
I say I've got nothing. Nothing at all.
I know this has been a great shock to you, Mrs. Van Dyke, that you can't be objective about it now. But once you've had a chance to think about it, I believe you'll realize that you're a very fortunate woman, that you've gained much more than you've lost. Now, I'd better go. But I'll stop in again tomorrow.
Let's talk about Social Security for a few moments. Social Security benefits to a serviceman increase with promotion and higher earnings in the years ahead. You will be fully insured for Social Security with 10 years of civilian employment or service time credit. Actually, older personnel near 65 may require somewhat less than 10 years Social Security credit time in order to be insured. The law which brought servicemen under Social Security did so with the provision that military time back to 1951 can now be counted towards Social Security credit. Well, that means, potentially, the serviceman can have 6 years of free Social Security credit. However, this free credit is only for servicemen who've had some active duty since January 1st of 1957. It was in January of 57 that servicemen began earning and paying for full Social Security coverage in just the same way as civilians. But for the serviceman, Social Security is something extra. Your service time now counts not only for Social Security, but also goes as credit toward regular military retirement. Have you investigated your Social Security benefits?
Now back to City Hospital. It's the next day. Susan and Paul are anxiously waiting for Dr. Crane, who's been in Mrs. Van Dyke's room.
How is she, Dr. Crane?
I don't know, Miss Renjulie. She seems much calmer this morning, but...
Didn't she say anything?
Yes. She wants to talk to your husband.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to go in, Mr. Renzulli?
I can't say that I want to, but... All right, sure. You wanted to see me, Mrs. Van Dyke?
Yes. I wanted to know why you did it.
Made that arrangement with Blair, you mean? I did it for Susan. And because when a man gets married, he's got to be willing to assume certain obligations.
You had no obligation to me.
You're Susan's mother.
Then why did you keep it a secret?
You really don't know.
Of course I know. You did it to get back at me. Humiliate me.
I've got better things to do with my time, Mrs. Van Dyke, than trying to humiliate you. As for getting back at you, why should I want to do that? You didn't stop me from getting what I wanted.
Then why didn't you tell me?
Because I knew you'd never accept anything from me. And I wanted you to. Because I was sorry for you.
Sorry?
Of course. I had all the important things. Susan, the children, my work. And you didn't have anything but your money.
And if things turned out, I didn't even have that.
That's right. Well, I don't like you any more than you like me, but we don't have to see each other ever again. We'll just go on with the old arrangement. Let Mr. Blair...
No. Will you ask Susan to come in, please? And Dr. Crane, too?
All right. Will you come in, Susan? Dr. Crane?
Yes, Paul.
And I'll be running along.
No, Paul. I want you to stay also.
What did you call me?
It's your name, isn't it?
Yes, but...
Well, haven't I a right to call my daughter's husband by his first name?
Mother, oh, Mother.
Don't start that now, Susan. Dr. Crane tried to tell me yesterday how lucky I was. That I'd gained more than I'd lost. Couldn't see it then. But after lying here all night, thinking about things, about you and Paul and the children... I've missed you, Susan.
I missed you, Mother. I've missed you terribly.
Why didn't you tell me that when I first came in?
Do you think it was easy to admit how wrong I'd been about everything? Especially about you? I had to be sure. But now that I am, do you think you can ever forgive me, Paul?
Oh, now look, Mother.
What did you say?
I guess if you can call me Paul... I can call you Mother, can't I?
Yes, Paul. Yes. Yes.
Be with us again next week at this same time for another presentation of City Hospital. City Hospital, where life begins and ends. Where around the clock, 24 hours a day, men and women are dedicated to the war against suffering and pain. This series of programs is produced and directed by Ira Ashley and features Melville Ruick as Dr. Crane. City Hospital has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
City Hospital, on Tuned to Yesterday, the 25th broadcast in that series from the late 1940s from Armed Forces Radio. You are listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. iDrama is next on Suspense, with a broadcast that was regarded as good enough for a repeat, which was heard 3 years after its original airing. A CBS episode from September 28, 1944, called The Man Who Couldn't Lose.
Now, Roma Wines presents...
Couldn't Lose, starring Gene Kelly.
Suspense is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wine. Yes, right now, a glass full would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you Suspense.
This is the Man in Black,
Tonight from Hollywood, we bring you a star, Mr. Gene Kelly, in a suspense play by Emile C. Tepperman called The Man Who Couldn't Lose. It is a tale of dawn till midnight in a man's life, a tale of murder and money and luck, such luck as pursues a man once in 100 years. But first, here is a message from your host, the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California.
Roma wines made in California are of such uniformly superb quality that they are imported by many foreign countries as the choice of true connoisseurs of fine wines.
And now, with The Man Who Couldn't Lose, and with the performance of Gene Kelly as Leonard Snell, the lucky New Yorker, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
You feeling all right now?
Sure. Sure, I feel swell.
You better not talk anymore, though.
Oh, why not? I got nothing to worry about. That's what I'm telling you. Something's happened to me. I'm not scared. Just like old man Mosley said, it doesn't happen often, but when it does, well, it's happened to me. Something's happened to me that doesn't happen once in 100 years. And it all happened in one day. Yeah. It began this morning.
Leonard. Leonard. Don't try to kid me. You're not asleep. Get up.
Sure. Okay.
I cook your breakfast. I come home and cook your dinner. In between, I work behind that counter all day until I'm so tired I can't hardly stand up. The least you can do is get up and drive me to work.
Sure, I will.
And what do you do? Nothing.
Now, listen, see.
You don't call what you do work, I hope. When did you last sell an insurance policy? When? I'll bet you can't even remember. I'm sure I can.
All right.
And when you do get up enough energy to sell one once in a while, I never see the money. Horses, sweepstakes, tickets, and numbers, anything. Just so long as you can gamble it away. But do you ever bring a dollar home? Not that I ever hear anything.
Ah, shut up.
Don't you tell me to shut up, Leonard Snell. I pay the rent when it gets paid. I pay the grocery bill. I pay for everything. You'd think at least I'd get a little appreciation once in a while.
I appreciate it. I hear about it enough.
Well, why don't you do something about it then?
Listen, Celia, I don't feel so good today.
Sure. That's what you said yesterday and the day before. That's what you always say every time anybody talks about work. Well, I'm sick and tired of it. You promised you were going to get a job this week, and you're going to do it.
Celia, there's something I got to tell you.
Oh, I suppose you want to wheedle some money out of me again. Well, if you can't even keep a little lunch money in your pocket...
No, Celia, listen, it's more than that.
It is. I suppose you got another hot tip on the races. Well, if you think I'm going to...
Will you shut up?
Well,
listen,
I'm not...
Listen, Celia, I've sold quite a few insurance policies in the last 6 months.
Oh, you have you? Well, where's the money? Oh, don't pull that on me. You're going to get a job.
All right. I spent the money.
On the races?
Yeah, only it wasn't all my money.
What do you mean?
I mean I'm $1,800 short, and this is the last day to settle up my accounts with the company.
You stole it.
No, I thought I was going to get it back and make a killing. I had some tips that were supposed to be sure things.
Oh, I get it. $1,800. Quite a coincidence, isn't it?
Well, 1,750. What's the difference?
And it just so happens that I have $1,800 in a safe deposit box that Aunt May left me this spring. Quite a coincidence.
Celia, I got to get that money back to them today.
Well, I don't believe a word of it. And you're not going to get that money.
If I don't, they can send me to jail.
And if I did believe you, you wouldn't get it. Maybe a few months in jail would teach you a little consideration. You know I got to have an operation sometime this fall. You think I want to go into a charity ward?
Celia, they can give me 5 years.
You've had your eye on that money ever since you heard I got it. But you're not going to get it. Why do you think I wear the key to that safe deposit box around my neck?
Celia.
Suppose you think I haven't noticed.
Celia,
you think I don't know all those times you tried to get that chain off my neck when you thought I was asleep.
Celia,
I wasn't quite as sleepy as you thought, mister.
All right, Celia.
And don't think you can wheel it out of me.
All right, Celia.
Glenn, get away from me. Len,
take your hand. I knew I'd have to do that to you someday. I bent over. She was dead, all right. The key was on that little chain around her neck, just like it had always been. I yanked on the chain and it snapped and the key came away in my hand. I shaved and got dressed and then I went through a purse. With $9 and some change and the usual junk and that Irish sweepstake ticket made out in the name of I'm a Winner. I put the money in my pocket and the ticket in my wallet. I was all set to go now, except for writing the letter. All of a sudden, I realized that what I was doing didn't seem strange to me at all. It was like one of those dreams where you think it's all happened before sometime. I wrote, to the police, I have killed my wife in a fit of anger. I can't go on living anymore after doing a thing like that to Celia. I'm short in my accounts, too, so there's only one thing for me to do. Don't bother looking for me. By the time you get this letter, you can find me in the city morgue. Yours truly, Leonard Snell.
Leonard.
Good morning, Mr. Mosley.
Leonard, I just had some great news. I knew you'd want to hear about it right away.
Well, I'm in sort of a hurry this morning.
All right. Where do you hear this? You know that picric acid dye formula I've been working on?
Yeah, yeah.
The government's just bought an option on it. They're going to try it out under factory conditions. When they do, well, my boy, it'll be worth $1 million.
Well, what do you know? That's really great. Well, I guess
so
I'd better be...
I have decided to take out that annuity you've been trying to sell me. Got an application with you?
You... Yes, sure.
Come on inside.
Oh, hello there, Leonard.
Good morning.
Why, my land, you look as though you've just seen a ghost or something.
Just sold a policy. You don't sell them like that every day, do you, my boy? What's that first premium? About $3,400, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there's a nice commission in that, eh, Leonard? About $1,800, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. 18.
Well, Leonard certainly deserves it. He works very hard. I see him coming home every evening with that briefcase and all those papers under his arm.
Most of those papers are the racing forms, aren't they, Leonard?
Well,
sit down, my boy. Oh, watch out for those bottles, picric acid. You know, I've been watching you, Leonard. You've had a hard time, but you're a gambler. You believe a lot in luck. Well, now, I've got a theory about luck.
Yeah. Now, when were you born?
March 1st, 1878. Yes, sir, luck is something that can come in big doses sometimes, almost as though fate had planned it out ahead of time.
Uh-huh. Who's the beneficiary?
Oh, my wife, of course. There's a perfectly good mathematical explanation for it. Of course, a number of unrelated events converge, and they all add up to the good fortune of a single man. Happens once in a century, perhaps, but it does happen.
Uh-huh. You can make the check out.
Of course. Why don't I make it out to you personally? Then I can collect that 3 months' rent you owe me, huh?
Well, sure. That'll be $3,255.
Oh, fine. I'll make it right out.
You know, Leonard, I was saying to Sam just this morning, I'm almost as glad for your sake as for ours. My, won't Celia be surprised?
Huh?
I said, won't Celia be surprised?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, where is Celia? She usually leaves for work long before this. I always hear her.
Well, she's...
Leonard, don't tell me there's anything wrong. I know she hasn't been feeling well lately.
No. She's got a little headache, you know.
Oh, poor thing. Why didn't you tell me? I'll go right upstairs and fix her
something. No, you better not. She told me she wanted to sleep. She's asleep now.
Oh, well, then I won't bother her.
Well, my boy, here's your check.
Thanks.
Now, don't play that on the races.
Don't worry.
But you keep playing your luck just the same. Luck is a funny thing. You've had a lucky start today. Maybe your luck has changed.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it has. Why couldn't he have signed it yesterday? That's all I could think of for a couple of minutes. Why couldn't he sign it yesterday? That was done now. So I got in the car and drove downtown. First, I went to Celia's bank and got that $1,800 out of the deposit box. Nobody said a word. Then I went to Moffley's bank and cashed his check. I had over $5,000 now. I drove over towards the park. A clock in the jewelry store said 10:15. That was plenty of time. Park, I stopped and gave the once over to the bum sitting around on the benches in the sun. There's always a bunch of them there. Pretty soon, I see a guy that looks about right.
Hey, you!
Me?
Yeah, you want to make $5?
You mean a job?
Oh, you won't have to strain yourself. I just hurt my wrist. I can't drive. I got to go uptown to meet a guy. Want to drive me?
Oh, okay.
You got a license?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a license.
Let's see it.
Okay. Here.
Floyd Eustace. Omaha, Nebraska. You're kind of a long ways from home, aren't you?
Yeah. But it's okay to drive with in this state if you've got a licensed driver with you.
Okay, Floyd Eustace. You'll do. We get in the car and head uptown. My luck is holding all right. This guy couldn't have been better if I'd looked a week. I see another clock, and it's only a little past 10:30 now. I still got lots of time, so I decide to clean up the details now.
How am I doing?
Okay, but turn right at the next block, Floyd. I want to go by the 43rd Street post office and mail a letter.
Sure. You could mail it at a letterbox, though.
Yeah, but, I don't want to mail it at a letterbox.
Oh, okay.
I go into the post office and get a stamp and mail a letter. The letter I tell about killing Celia is just addressed to the police commissioner, 21 Center Street. Somehow, I just don't trust the letterbox because if the police don't get that letter right on time and start looking, it's not so good. I go out and get in the car and tell Floyd Eustace where to go. We head uptown, and after a while, we get to Fort Tryon Park, right up above Riverside Drive, looking over the river. There's hardly ever anybody up there at this time of year, so I feel pretty safe. Sure enough, there wasn't. I got the monkey wrench out, and I had it in my hand.
This right?
Yeah. Just pull over there up against the rail.
Gee, I never been up here. Must be quite a drop down there. A couple of hundred feet, huh?
Uh-huh.
This where you're supposed to meet the guy?
Yeah.
Right here.
I dragged him into the back seat and took off all his clothes and then all mine. I changed clothes with him right down to the underwear and socks. I put all my papers in his pockets. My license, old man Moffrey's application, my wallet, the works. Then I dragged him up front again behind the wheel. Then there was something else I had to do that I didn't like much either, but... well, I couldn't take any chances. I held his head back against the seat and raised the monkey wrench again. I hit him in the face. I hit him a lot.
Stand back now, stand back.
I tell you, officer, it didn't land more than 3 feet from me. Not more than 3 feet.
What happened? This car just rolled off the Palisades up there somehow and landed smack in the middle of the street.
Gee, look at his face. He must have gone right through the windshield.
Poor fella. Guy named Snell. Leonard Snell.
I was free. I was free of Celia and all her belly aching. I was free to do anything I wanted. I had $5,000 in my pocket, and the cops had Leonard Snell's body down in the morgue, just like I told them they would in the letter. Oh, my luck was holding, but good. I went over to the 181st Street bus station. There was a bus leaving for Boston in 20 minutes. I bought a ticket. Then I got a paper in the corner and went into the cafeteria there and sat down at the counter. I was pretty hungry.
What's yours?
Scrambled eggs with bacon, French fries, orange juice, and coffee. And I got to catch a bus. It won't take long, will it?
No longer than it takes an egg to scramble.
No. Oh, okay. Excuse me.
Well, that's all right, Mac. I like to read a newspaper while I eat myself. Kind of aids the digestion, I find.
Yeah.
Here's your orange juice.
Thanks.
Oh, dear. Some guys have all the luck, don't they?
Hmm?
I said some guys have all the luck. I was just noticing in your paper there about those Irish sweepstake winners.
Oh, yeah. Some...
Now, what's the matter? You feel bad?
Have all the luck. When I came to, somebody was swabbing my head with water. I paid my check and got out of there somehow and looked at the paper again. That's what it said, all right. I'm a winner, draws favorite in Irish sweeps. My ticket. And it went on to say how it was worth at least $40,000 and maybe $150,000 for horse one. And all of a sudden, I was standing there cursing and swearing at Celia, right out loud, just as though she was alive. Until I saw people were staring at me, and I stopped. Oh, if it hadn't have been for her, I'd have $40,000. $40,000! Now that $40,000 was just a one-way ticket to the hot seat. Because that $40,000 belonged to Leonard Snell, and that Irish sweep ticket was in Leonard Snell's wallet.
and Leonard Snell's wallet was in the pocket of that bum that was supposed to be me. Why, now the cops would have it along with the rest of Leonard Snell's stuff down at headquarters after they put the body in the morgue. Well, I still had my $5,000 and a bus ticket to Boston. You can't get all the breaks all the time, was what I figured then. So I got in the bus.
I have plenty of seats in the rear.
This seat taken?
No, not at all. Sit right down.
Thanks.
Well, somebody must be feeling pretty good this afternoon.
Huh?
The guy that got that there, I'm a winner. That ticket on the sweep. I see it says there they pay him $40,000 for it right now. $40,000.
Yeah.
I'd sure like to be in his shoes, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And I see it says
there... Here, do you want to read it?
Well, you don't need to get sore.
Skip it. I would... Holy...
What? All aboard.
Hey, stop! Hey, let me out. I gotta get out of here.
Will you make up your mind?
I don't have to make up my mind, brother. I don't have to make up my mind. It was right then that I got the idea what was happening. It was just like old man Mosley said. It may only happen once in 100 years, but it was happening to me. Oh, my luck was riding high. And when your luck is like that, you just can't lose. Because there it was, right in the paper again, on page 3. Freak explosion in Brooklyn kills 3. And it was my house. And the people killed were Mosley and his wife and Celia. They thought it was caused by old Mosley's chemicals or something. I didn't know. I didn't care. All I knew was they thought Celia had been killed by the explosion and the fire. And I was in the clear. Walk into the police station, get my sweepstake ticket, collect that $40,000, be set for life. Oh, I knew just what I was going to tell them. It was a lead pipe cinch. I was walking on air all the way to the police station. I was going up the steps, then I stopped. Because I just remembered something terrible, and if I remembered it 10 seconds later, I'd have walked right into the electric chair. I remembered the letter. I was led. By morning, the cops had had that letter, telling how I killed Celia. That letter that I'd taken all the trouble to mail at the 43rd Street Post Office, so I'd be sure to get off all right. Oh, it felt even worse this time than I had before, because it seemed like I'd almost had that money right in my hand. I was pretty shaky. I went into a bar to get a drink.
Yes, sir, what'll it be?
A double rye.
All right, sir. Like a little chaser on the side, huh?
No.
That'll be...
Just leave the bottle.
Oh, yes, sir.
Now we bring you 5 minutes of the latest news.
Hey, Garnet
Marks,
up, will you?
Yeah, sure.
New York City. In one of the most daring holdups in the annals of New York crime, a gang of armed men this noon robbed a United States mail truck just as it was leaving the 43rd Street Post Office, removing 8 sacks of mail and the entire morning collection of the post office. Apparently, the gunmen were after a shipment of currency destined for the Federal Reserve Bank. But according to officials, the joke is on the gangsters. All they got was the regular mail.
Here. Now, wait a minute. You got change coming.
Keep it. Keep the change. I knew it had happened now. I couldn't lose. I simply couldn't lose. Because those mugs that stuck up that mail truck had got my letter. Nothing in the world could stop me now. Officer, I've just been held up.
Held up, huh?
Yeah.
Well, what happened?
Well, I picked up a guy who asked me for a lift about 225th Street and Broadway.
Yes.
I was driving along by Van Cortlandt Park when suddenly grabbed me. He hit me with something, and that's all I remember until I woke up lying in the park. My car was gone, and then I found how he'd taken my wallet, my money, well, everything.
I see. What's your name?
Leonard Snell. I
Leonard did... Snell?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh. Say, Lieutenant.
Yeah?
This gentleman is Mr. Leonard Snell. He was held up this morning, and his car was stolen.
Oh. Just step in here, will you, Mr. Snell?
Why, sure.
Sit down.
Thanks.
We've got some news for you, Mr. Snell.
Did you find my car?
Well, yes, but,
Well...
You haven't seen the papers today?
Not since this morning.
I've got some good news and some bad news for you, Mr. Snell. Maybe I'd better tell you the bad news first.
Pretty bad.
Go ahead.
Your wife was killed this morning, Mr. Snell, in a fire at your home.
My wife? Killed?
And this probably won't interest you much under the circumstances, Mr. Snell, but you've drawn a ticket worth $40,000 in the Irish sweepstakes. Win the Irish sweepstakes and then lose your wife the same day. Some people sure have all the hard luck in the world.
Luck. Within about 15 minutes, more things were happening to me than can happen to most guys in a dozen lifetimes. And then comes a jackpot I've been waiting for.
Yeah, I wish you could hold that.
Hold it, Mr. Snell. Hold that Polish right there.
Just one more, will you, please?
If you care to make a statement, Mr. Snell, would you mind telling the public how you feel? I know it's pretty tough, but if you could just make a statement.
Please, fellas, please.
Excuse me. I hate to trouble you at this time, Mr. Snell, but the banking syndicate I represent is prepared to offer you $40,000 in cash for your sweepstakes ticket. I have the money right here in cash.
All right, but I don't care much about the money now.
That was at 4:30. By 6, I have $45,000 in my pocket, cash. And I'm registered at the Waldorf and sitting down to dinner.
I'll take the flank steak, please, medium.
Yes, sir. I'll have you order very shortly.
Hello, pal. Mind if I sit down?
Oh, you a reporter?
Not exactly. I'm sort of a collector. You owe me 40 grand, pal, and I come to collect now.
40? Why, I don't know.
Oh, yes, you do, pal. Remember that little letter you wrote to the police commissioner this morning? That you mailed at the 43rd Street post office? Remember that? Some friends of mine found it. They figure it's worth just about 40 grand.
You're one of the guys that stuck up that mail.
You want to make something of it? There's a big reward. There's a cop right outside the hotel. Kind of figured you'd play ball.
Where's the letter?
My friend's got it right outside my car. You still got that dough in your cash, like the paper said?
Yeah.
Come on.
All right.
Yeah, you're a pretty lucky guy at that, pal. Suppose somebody else has got that letter. Don't worry, pal. Your secret is safe with me. Here's the car.
Is that the guy, Frankie?
Yeah, and he's acting real reasonable, too. Get up the cash, pal.
You recognize the letter, don't you?
Yeah, here's your money.
And here's your letter. Only don't try anything funny, because we still know what that letter says. And the cops could always dig up the body and find out how your old lady really kicked off. Couldn't they?
I think he gets the idea. So long, pal.
Officer! Those are the gangsters! They have
Harry,
the
come on, get down!
I saw the gangster right there! Officer! Somebody better help that poor man! He's been shot!
Poor fellow looks like he's paralyzed or something. You!
Yeah?
You go call an ambulance. I'll stand by this man here.
Okay. What's up, Jerry?
We just had a little shooting match with those mail robbers. The other boys got him down the street, but this poor man was shot when they fired back.
Say. This letter here in the street, addressed to the police commissioner.
No, the shot had it in his hand before he fell. You better open it; it might be evidence.
All right.
No.
What?
No.
Leonard Snell again. Better put a guard on Snell at the hospital, Jerry. From the looks of this letter, he's going to stand trial for murder.
Better not talk anymore, Mr. Snell.
What's the difference? What's the difference how much I talk? That's what I wanted to tell him. Once they did get the letter, I'll never go to trial. Because I got luck. Don't you see? It comes once in 100 years and I got it. I got that kind of luck. And when you got that kind of luck, you can't lose. You can't lose. You can't lose.
Hello, you still here?
Yeah, I got to guard that fellow Snell as long as he's here in the hospital.
But did you ever see the like of him? I don't suppose one man ever had so much luck in one day in the whole wide world.
Well, I guess his luck has played out now, all right, though.
It's funny. She said, you can't lose.
Well, he's wrong there, because that ladder's going to fly. Just as sure as my name is Jerry Malone.
No, you're wrong, Jerry. His luck is still good.
What?
He's dead.
And so closes The Man Who Couldn't Lose, starring Gene Kelly. Tonight's study in Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear.
Have you discovered, as so many thousands of Americans have, how much Roma wines add to the enjoyment of your meals?
Gene Kelly appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor production Kismet. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Mr. John Hodiak as star of Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 28, 1944 on CBS. The same show would be repeated live in December of 1947. And so closes this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.